This is a great day. It's a great privilege, as has already been stated, to gather around this table and for this many people to remember the death and the resurrection of Jesus Christ, his coming again. What a great privilege it is to be a part of one another. We're part of a body, you know. We're one part of each other, each one of us. And we're so thankful to have those of you who are visiting with us. Reach out to people round about you and touch and minister and care for them. And let's be genuine members of a body together. There are a lot of things happening today that are important. The most important of all, of course, is this feast that we've just eaten. There are a lot of other things that are happening that are part of it as we apply ourselves in life. The graduation day. This is Mother's Day. Bless all our dear mothers, how much they mean to us and how thankful we are for you. But mainly it's the Lord's Day, and we honor him today as we gather here. Then the kingdom of heaven shall be compared to 10 maidens who took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish, and 5 were wise. For when the foolish took their lamps, they took no oil with them. But the wise took flasks of oil with their lamps. As the bridegroom was delayed, they all slumbered and slept. But at midnight there was a cry, "Behold the bridegroom, come out to meet him." Then all those maidens rose and trimmed their lamps. And the foolish said to the wise, "Give us some of your oil, for our lamps are going out." But the wise replied, "Perhaps there will not be enough for us and for you. Go rather to the dealers and buy for yourselves." And while they went to buy, the bridegroom came, and those who were ready went in with him to the marriage feast. And the door was shut. Afterwards, the other maidens came also, saying, "Lord, Lord, open to us." But he replied, "Truly I say to you, I do not know you. Watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour." The parable was our Lord's favorite method of communicating divine realities to human beings. By taking a divine truth and throwing it alongside of a human situation, Jesus Christ would relate in the utmost simplicity of narrative some of the most deep and abiding truths that have ever been told to mortal man. And a parable is simply that. It's the casting beside a human situation a divine truth that brings to our attention truths that will mold and shape our lives. In this particular story here, there were 10 virgins or 10 maidens who took their station outside the bridal house waiting on the bridegroom to come and claim his bride. They were all maidens. They were all in possession of their bridal lamps. They had a lot of things in common. They all went out to meet the bridegroom. They all had some oil. They all, while he tarried, they all slumbered and slept. And they all responded to the call, "Get up, he's coming." They all got up and trimmed their lamps. But there the similarity ends. For 5 of those women at that midnight call were judged to have been foolish. And they were excluded from finally realizing the utmost of their call. They were excluded from realizing the final fruition and purpose for their very being. And it's these that I want to talk to you about this morning. So many times we talk about the kinds of things that make life a success, and they ought to be talked about, and the positive ought to be dwelt on. But I think today we ought to talk about the negative and let them serve as warnings to you and me, to both those graduating today from college and those of us who are long since passed that day, and yet all of whom are in the very midst of the tests of life and will one day stand before God in the day of judgment at the great test to determine whether or not we graduate into the fuller life. It's these people, these ones who are empty vessels, that I want to call your attention to today. They warn us against a type of goodness that's not good enough. They cause us to be warned against a kind of life that's not lived long enough, or on a plane that's high enough, or to a depth that's deep enough. Whatever you look at this parable and however you consider it, you find that it simply says not enough, not enough. Good beginning perhaps, but I question it. I think from beginning to end, the key issue at stake here is just simply the expression not enough. Not enough at the beginning, not enough at the ending, just simply not enough. I don't believe that we'll have to press or twist or force this passage or the event that it relates in order to see and hear clearly the lesson, the moral lesson that this particular story conveys. Very simply stated, in terms that you and I can understand, especially today, there were just simply 10 people in this graduating class that Jesus tells about here. They were 10 maidens who had, for some time prior to this event, been making preparation for an event that they were well aware of that was coming, and one for which they'd been making preparation, and an event that was of greatest and utmost importance. These women were all involved in that kind of preparation. Only 50% of these women graduated into the higher life. The other 50% failed. But it must be also said that at least 50% did graduate, which in a very simple way, without a lot of explanation, just simply says that you have as great a chance to succeed as you do to fail in life. That the cards are not stacked against you in the deck of life. It's all there. It just simply depends upon how much and how good and how adequate preparation you make for the test of life. And so you've got just as good a chance to succeed as you have to fail. It's sobering to think that the outcome of this preparation, that the determination of whether or not it was adequate, does not become evident until the crisis. It doesn't become evident until the time when the real issue is at stake, when the real crisis, the judgment, and that's what the word crisis means. It was only then that these people knew that their preparation had not been adequate. I want to ask a question for us all. Is there anything in this parable that you and I then, who are sitting in this audience in time's side of eternity, is there anything that we can learn from it that will help us prepare for our finals so that we can graduate? Some of you are saying, you're too late. We've already had our finals and I failed. Or others are saying, it's too late. We've already taken our finals and we're supposed to graduate at 2:30. Well, that's not the kind of test I'm talking about. That's not the kind of graduation I'm meaning. I'm talking about the kind of test that comes every day in the daily call that you hear, the bridegroom is coming, get up and meet him. It's that kind of test that I'm talking about this morning. And it's a lesson that I think we can learn. Very simple one. This is a simple parable. We don't want to over apply it or clutter it. But I want to ask you the question then, who are these lamps that fail? Who are they and what are they? First of all, understand this, and it's so important that you see this, otherwise it's just a story. The lamps here are lives. Lives. Jesus isn't interested in lamps and in oil. Not really. He's interested in lives. Just as surely as in Matthew the 7th chapter, Jesus talked about houses and being built upon rock and being built upon sand. He wasn't interested in houses and architectural design and sand and rocks and that sort of thing. He talked in Matthew 7 about wind and about water coming and about floods coming and beating upon a house, but he's not interested really in weather conditions. He's talking about a lot of things here, but all of which he's talking is simply that he has to do with lives. He's talking in Matthew 7 about lives being built upon the rock of his word. or else about lives not being built upon the rock of his word, but being built upon the sands of those things that are temporal and elusive and passing. And Matthew 25, in this text here, he's not talking about lamps, he's talking about lives. Lives that fail. And we're being confronted today with an entire generation of people that has an overabundant supply of lives that are failing. Is there any lesson that we can gain here? Yes, there is. And I want to mention very briefly two or three lives or lamps that are failing. They're going out. Number one, Jesus would say that the light or lamp of that person will fail whose religion is primarily a matter of lamp or external, just the shell. That kind of person's life is going to fail. The person whose religion consists mainly of profession and not possession. The person's life who consists mainly of profession and not obsession. The man or woman whose life consists of profession without inner sanctification and outer illumination. That kind of person's life is going to fail. It's not going to pass the test. James mentions both of these in one very simple statement, James 1:27. When he said, pure religion and undefiled before God and the Father is this, to visit the fatherless and the widows in their affliction and keep yourself unspotted from the world. Two very simple statements that cover both internal and external, both internal sanctification and external illumination or radiation. James says, if you want your lamp to be full and glowing, your life is going to have to consist of service that renders itself to those who are the fatherless and the widows. In other words, it relates itself to people round about you. And it also cleans up and keeps pure the internal part of you, internal sanctification and external radiation or illumination. He mentions them both. He says, if any man would be really and truly a lamp that's filled and glowing and burning, he's going to have to keep himself unspotted from the world. And those people who are not keeping themselves unspotted from the world, let me serve you warning right now, your lamp is going to fail. You're not going to be admitted into that eternal kingdom. It involves purity of life, internal sanctification. Let me give you another one. Just prior to this, in verse 26 of James 1, James says, if any man thinks himself to be religious, in other words, if any man thinks that he's a lamp that's full of oil and burning bright, but he bridles not his tongue, but deceives his own heart, that man's religion is vain. That man's lamp is empty. That's what he's saying. Just that simple. If any man thinks that he's full, that his vessel is there and it's full and he's glowing and all, and yet he doesn't bridle his tongue, his mouth is filthy and all about his speech betrays him, that man's lamp is empty. That's all he's saying. He says the same thing about external illumination. When he says there that if you would be really and truly a lamp burning bright that doesn't fail, your life is going to have to be dedicated to service to other people. Visiting the fatherless and the widows is an expression that simply relates itself to every human being that you meet, wherever they may be. And he says the only way you can be a genuine lamp shining bright for God is to have sacrificed yourself and to be used up and burned up in the service to other people, shedding light in the community around about you to dispel the darkness. That's what Christianity is about. The oil wasn't made to just be in the container. The container wasn't made just to be in space. But the container was made for the oil, and the oil was made for burning, and the burning was made for light, and the light was made to dispel darkness. And unless our lamps are full of oil and are burning and the burning is dispelling the darkness, then we're missing the purpose of religion. In Matthew, the 25th chapter again, further on down in this, there's a third parable that Jesus tells. And he says there that this same thing is essential. He separates the lamps, one on the right and those on the others on the left. Or he calls them sheep and goats, but he's not interested in sheep and goats. He's interested in lamps, but he's not really interested in lamps. He's interested in people. And he put the empty lamps on his left hand and the full lamps on his right hand. And to the empty lamps, he said, when I was hungry, you didn't feed me. When I was thirsty, you didn't give me anything to drink. When I was sick and in prison, you didn't visit me. When I was naked, you didn't clothe me. When I was a stranger, you didn't welcome me. Well, those empty lamps said, well, Lord, when did we see you like that? Then he said, whenever you did not do these things to the very least of my brethren, you didn't do it to me. To the full lamps, he said, the opposite. You did these things to me. They said, well, when did we see you like that? He said, whenever you saw these least of my brethren and you did it to me. But the question there was simply this: what kind of lamp is going to stand the test? And Jesus said, it's only those lamps that serve out and illuminate the darkness and bring light and illumination to people round about in service. Here's the sobering thought. The test is not the judgment. Brethren and friends, the test is that daily call to service to humanity and of our surrender to God. That's the test. The judgment merely reveals the grade that you've made during the time that you've been tested. That's the test. How are you going to fare? Well, there's a second lamp that fails. And it's the lamp that refuses to go the second mile in its dedication to God. And it's in this passage here. I think it's just as clearly stated. These women who were foolish were women who were refusing to go the second mile. We usually think about the second mile kind of living as having to do with people and our relationships to each other. But back before that, there's a prior claim upon us by God Himself to which we must answer and which will indicate our actual turn of mind. We will either have gone the second mile with God or else we'll never go that second mile with people. Second milers with people are people who are second milers with God. For example, when these women went to buy their oil costs money. And they weren't buying necessarily from the Arabs, however they may have been back there too. But oil costs money then and now. And the wise virgin said, we don't care what the cost is, we're going to do whatever is necessary to take care of that for which we are created and called. The foolish virgin said, well, I don't know now, oil costs money. Let's just buy enough just to get by with what we think is the immediate need. And let's not go to all this trouble. Don't get all excited about blowing and glowing and radiating. Don't worry about that. So those who were the foolish virgins, they failed the test initially, quality-wise. They were not second milers. And I want you to see this distinction, please. This is so important. I found this week that quality-wise, these foolish virgins missed the boat. They were not second milers for the simple reason that they refused to sacrifice at the beginning of their commitment to this bridegroom that which they had every reason to expect that they should have and that he had every reason to expect them to do. But they refused to do that. These people refused to do it simply because of the fact that there was this failing to commit themselves in an unreserved manner, even though Jesus had said earlier and later, he said, whosoever therefore he be of you that renounces not all that he has cannot be my disciple. He cannot be my lamp. He cannot be my person carrying of the lamp of life. And yet these people refused to commit that. But now watch, here's where the sad, sobering fact lies. These people weren't second milers distant-wise either. They didn't make it. Oh, you say the test came way on down there when they tried to trim their lamps. No! The test came back there at the marketplace where they were buying their oil. That's where the test came. And how many of us in the hour of temptation, how many of us whenever we arise to trim our lamps and let our light shine in the community, we say, oh, I failed in this particular incident. No, you didn't. You failed back there at the marketplace where you bought your oil. You failed at the waters of baptism when you didn't bury the old man. There's where the failure came. And that very sacrifice or that very refusal to sacrifice at the start of your service was the very factor that caused you to be a failure in the finish. It started way back there at the beginning when you gave yourself to God and did it inadequately. There's where the real failure came. For not being a second miler from the very start in your relationship with God, there's where our future failure is determined, it's determined right there. Those people whose religion is a matter mainly of outer lamp, just simply a show, churchgoers, but that's all, or those people who are simply refusing to be second milers, they're not going to do anything more than just exactly what's necessary. This is written all over this parable. And those of us who are in this auditorium today, those of us who are just doing just enough to get by, not going to do any more, those of us who are interested primarily just in the show of public meetings and whatever it may be, but you lack the inner resources, you lack the inner oil, this is the kind of a lamp that's going to fail. You might as well count on it, and you can put your mark on it and just simply set your foot down. That's where it's going to come. You're going to fail. But there's a third area in which, or a third lamp that's going to fail, and that's the lamp or the person's life. That lamp or life is going to fail that relies and is satisfied to rely upon letting other people do for it what it must do for itself. That lamp is going to fail. Give us of your oil, for our lamps are going out. And the wise said, we cannot. They said, no, there won't be enough perhaps for us and you. You go rather and buy it from those that are selling it. There have been people who've said perhaps that these wise virgins here were very foolish in the sense they were selfish. Were these wise virgins selfish? Why did they not share? Did Jesus not teach us to share? Yes, he taught us to share, but there's more involved here than oil. The oil that he's talking about here is character. And you don't borrow character in the hour of trial. You don't borrow these things that make up your very being from someone else who possesses it. These things must be bought at the market of self-sacrifice, at the market of discipline, at the market of surrender to God. That's where these kinds of things are purchased. You don't borrow them from somebody else. No, they have to be purchased there. These wise virgins weren't selfish. Their answer was inevitable, because the oil that's talked about here is character. If a person lacks that inner resource, those of you who are just graduating and those of us who are out in the test of life now, if we lack that inner resource that causes godliness to be shed abroad all over the earth because of our influence, if we lack it in the hour of trial, there's no way possible that you can go and borrow it from somebody who does possess it. You can just forget about it. It can't be borrowed. You'll have to go and buy it at the market where it's sold. It can't be borrowed any more than a house built upon a foundation in Matthew 7 can lend its foundation to the house that's built on the sand when the rains come and the floods come and the winds blow and beat upon that house. One foundation cannot be taken and substituted under the house of another. It just doesn't happen like that. If a house is built upon that foundation, that's where it stands. And if a house is built upon sand, that's where it'll have to fall. You can't lend and borrow foundations any more than you can lend and borrow oil, any more than you can lend and borrow godliness or lend and borrow convictions. You either have it or you don't. And you've either purchased it at the marketplace of self-discipline and sacrifice and surrender, or you don't possess it at all, but you can't borrow it from somebody else. These women here said, let us have some of your oil. The wise men said, we can't do it, not because they were selfish, but just simply because it is absolutely impossible to borrow that sort of thing from someone else. When temptation comes as a thief in the night to you, you can't borrow moral fiber, young people. You've either got it or you haven't. When the trumpets of God sound you to the battle, you can't go and borrow the shield of faith that'll protect you from the darts of the evil one. You can't go then grab somebody else's shield and say, let me have that thing quick. Oh, no. You've either bought it at the market before you get to that trial. You've either bought it at the market and forged it out of all of this struggle and trial with God before you get to that great trial, or else you won't make it. And when the trumpet call or when the sound calls and says that the bridegroom is coming, get up and trim your lamps and get ready to meet him. You don't borrow oil from those that are prepared. You go and buy it, but then it's too late. Someone has said, no person has more religion than he can command in an emergency. That's right. No person has more religion than he can command in an emergency. Hit your finger with a hammer and listen to your mouth. That's the extent of your religion. Get on the back seat of a car with some beautiful thing and then see how you conduct yourself toward her. That's the extent of your religion. Fill out your income tax and see whether or not you cheat. No man possesses more religion than he's able to command in an emergency. These three lamps will fail. If your life is such that you're interested mainly just simply in show, just simply in the external as far as lamp is concerned, the thing itself, or if you've been one who has held back from God and you will not give him the full sacrifice life that he deserves and demands, or if you're content to let other people do for you what you ought to be doing and what in essence you must do for yourself, you're not going to make it. You're just not going to make it. The consequence of lamps that fail is one simple expression: the doors that were closed. And the door was closed. What a frightening prospect, but it's real. The door was closed. Just very briefly, how many doors will be closed to many of you in this audience this morning and many of us? How many doors will be closed as you go out into life simply because of the fact that you did not make the necessary preparation while you were in that period of preparation? How many of you will go out and they'll look at your grade average and you'll say, I'm sorry, we're looking for somebody who's got the stick ability to stay in there and get at it and produce good grades. And the door will be slammed in your face simply because of the fact that way back there at the marketplace where you bought it, you didn't buy enough oil. You didn't burn enough oil. The midnight oil that takes to prepare. But that's not really the kind of opportunity that he's talking about. The door that slammed in the face of these people, it was a door of opportunity. The door of opportunity to go into a fuller life, but it represents the door of eternal life, the eternal kingdom. Listen to this statement, and our time is past. In the book of 2 Peter, Peter makes reference to this kind of oil, and it's so clear that I want to read it because he details it and delineates it here for you to hear and for you to put into your life. For this very reason, in other words, because of the demand of being made upon you and me for oil in life, for this very reason, make every effort to supplement your faith with virtue, and virtue with knowledge, and knowledge with self-control, and self-control with steadfastness, and steadfastness with godliness, and godliness with brotherly affection, and brotherly affection with love. For if these things are yours and abound, they keep you from being ineffective or unfruitful in the knowledge of the Lord Jesus Christ. For whoever lacks these things is blind and short-sighted, and has forgotten that he was cleansed from his old sins. Listen. Therefore, brethren, be the more zealous to confirm your call and election, for if you do this, you will never fall. You'll never fail. So there will be richly provided for you an entrance. The door will be opened. An entrance into the eternal kingdom of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. That's what the oil consists of. Faith, virtue, patience, all these great godly virtues. Do you possess them? If you don't, your lamp's going to fail. What kind of condition? Look into your container, would you? Look into your lamp this morning. You got enough oil to get you through? When the midnight call comes to you and me, and it comes day after day as we meet the Lord and don't recognize him, like the woman who had been told by the Lord, I'm coming to see you today. And she got busy and she cleaned up all of her house and she worked from dawn until dusk. During the course of the day, an orphan came and said, I need some help. She said, honey, don't bother me right now. I'm getting ready for the Lord. And a widow came and she said, lady, I don't have time to fool with you right now. The Lord's coming. I've got to get ready. And through the day, other people came and other needs arose. She said, I don't have time. She waited then at the end of the day and waited and waited and waited and waited. The Lord never came. That night she had a vision and said, why? He said, "Lady, I came to you about 10 times today and you wouldn't let me in." The midnight call of God, the midnight call of the bridegroom isn't always recognized. It'll come in the guise of orphans and widows and the preaching of the gospel and the needs and all of these are the calls of God to meet the bridegroom. And if you fail those calls, your lamp is failing. And when that great final call of the bridegroom, "He's coming, trim your lamps," you're going to look and find that there's no oil in yours. May God bless us. Right now, you're being called on to respond to this gospel message. Now watch, you're being asked to either confess your faith in Jesus Christ and be baptized, and let that commitment be a total, full, second mile commitment all the way, making Jesus Christ Lord. Or if you're here and you've already been baptized, but it was a faulty, half-hearted, incomplete, insufficient commitment, then for goodness sake, stand up and say so and say, "Lord, let me go back to the counter where I bought it. Let me come back and rededicate myself. I want my oil to be plenty." And that invitation is yours now while we stand and sing.